Yeah, let's hear it for the band. Man, they bring it every single weekend. Awesome job. You know, and how many times have we said that line right there? Man, I wish I could take back time, right? I mean, you know, if we've said that, you know, once, we've said it a dozen times, we wish we could rewrite a moment in our past, a moment in a relationship, maybe a financial moment. And that's what we're talking about in this series called Do Over. We're in week number 2 today, as Eric said, and we're taking a look at how to ensure that the next time isn't like the first time. And, you know, if you need a do-over in anything, you know, this series is for you. You know, maybe you just, you know, did a do-over in your career, or maybe you just did a financial do-over, or maybe your marriage is kind of on pause right now, or maybe it's even in the rearview mirror, and you're looking forward to the next time and saying, okay, how do I make sure the next time isn't like the last time? Maybe it was academically, morally, whatever it might be, you know, we want to make sure that next time doesn't just repeat itself from the last time. So really excited you're here this morning. My name's Kurt, by the way. I'm the lead pastor here at Cross Point. And the reason that we're talking about this is because we all need a do-over at one point or another. In fact, last week we looked at how we learn from the mistakes in our lives that actually matter the least. Have you ever noticed that? You know, maybe we're learning a new sport or a new board game, or you know, you just got on, you know, social media and started on Twitter and you're like, hey, I love you. And you're like, oh, I just told the world that I love them. You know, you didn't realize it went to everybody, and you say, well, man, I will never do that again. But you know what we also learned last week is that in the areas that matter the most, we tend to repeat our mistakes, you know, financially, relationally, romantically, you know, morally, whatever it might be. And the reason for this, there's actually 3 myths that we looked at last weekend that cause us to continue to repeat our mistakes. And just to kind of go over them real quick, in case you forgot them, the first one is the experience myth. You know, we say in light of the experience I just had, that just means the next time I'll do better or I'll learn from that. And what we discovered is that experience alone doesn't make us wiser, right? What does experience do? Experience makes us, anybody? Older, remember? More frustrated, more lonely, more bitter, more, it's evaluated experience that actually makes us wiser. We're going to do some evaluation later today. We also learned last week another myth is the know better myth. You know, well, since I know better, then I will do better. And I discovered this a few months ago as I was talking to my 12-year-old daughter, Macy. She was talking about her friends, and she said, you know, Dad, a lot of my friends know better. Now, she's 12. She's, like, in junior high, right? And she says, a lot of my friends know better, but that doesn't mean that they do the right thing. And I started laughing. She's like, what are you laughing about? And I'm like, Macy, that's not a kid thing. That's like an everybody thing, right? I mean, just because we know what we're supposed to do doesn't give us the self-control or the discipline to do better the next time. And then the third myth is the time myth. And the time myth is the most interesting. It's this idea that we fall into this idea that time is an enemy. Time is against me. You know, everybody. The clock is ticking. Everybody's doing this. Everybody's moving on. I need to move on. I need to jump back in the saddle. I need to get back on eHarmony. You know, I mean, you know, we have this idea that this might be the last ship that comes by, and so I need to jump on as quick as I can. And the truth is, time is actually our friend, right? And sometimes we need to hit the pause button just long enough, you know, that we can kind of evaluate where we are and how to assure the next time isn't like the last time. Specifically those of you who are serial daters, all right? You know who you are? You know, serial daters. I'm not talking breakfast, right? I'm talking like you know, you have relationship after relationship after relationship, and everyone that you're in, you're like, I don't even, you know, they all end the same. They all look the same. And at some point, you come to the realization and you say, you know, what do all of these relationships have in common? Let me give you a little hint. It's you. All right? It's you. You follow yourself around. All right? Everywhere you go, there you are. And so in every relationship, you're like, wow, this smells and feels and looks just like the last time. It's because you and I are in all of our experiences. And so, you know, maybe you need to hit the pause button on that for a moment. And this is so hard to do. We don't like to hit the pause button, but we need to hit the pause button so the next time can be different than the last time. So today, we're going to begin a three-week trek over these next 3 weeks, and we're going to talk about three things, all right? And these are kind of three exercises, three processes, three dynamics that we have to go through to ensure that the next time isn't like the last time. And so I'm going to give you all three today. I kind of want you to know where we're going over the next 3 weeks. So today, we're going to talk about owning it. Next week, we're going to talk about rethinking it. And then on week number four of this series, we're going to look at how we release it. Now, one of the cool things that's going to happen on week four, on May 3rd, is this is going to be a baptism weekend. And so, you know, maybe for you, baptism is one of your next natural spiritual next steps, meaning maybe you've entered into relationship with Jesus, whether that was years and years ago, or maybe it was just a couple weekends ago during Easter weekend. And you know, baptism is a very, very powerful step that simply just expresses publicly what I've decided, you know, privately in my life. And there's something powerful when we follow Jesus' example as he invites us to be baptized. And maybe you're just looking for a fresh start. Maybe a part of your do-over process is spiritually saying, you know, I need to take this step spiritually because I need a watershed, no pun intended, a watershed moment, you know, where I just have a fresh start and I realize that baptism is a part of that if I've chosen to enter into a relationship with Jesus. So if you're interested in that, you can mark that on the back of your connection card. And we've got an informational meeting between our two services at 10:45 next weekend. And if you mark that on your card, we'll send you information on that. But today, I want to talk about owning it. Owning it. See, in order to assure that your past doesn't repeat itself, you have to own your role in the past. Right? Meaning, you know, in order that your past doesn't creep into your future, all right, you have to pause long enough, and this is so hard, right? You have to pause long enough to own your part of the disaster. You're part of the responsibility of whatever you need a do-over in, all right? Whether it was professionally or relationally or financially, whatever it is. And so as we jump into this morning, we've got a great scene from the hit TV show The Goldbergs. It's become one of my favorite TV shows. And this just gives us a picture right here at why we have such a hard time owning it. Let's take a look at the screens.
This is going to be so rad.
Really? You guys are actually stoked about a slumber party?
Slumber party? I thought this was a sleepover.
What's the difference?
Ha! Stupid Chad Cramp doesn't know the difference. Someone should tell him in great detail so he knows what to expect tonight.
Slumber parties are for little kids with sleeping bags. But at a sleepover, we break all the rules.
Chad is wondering if you could give some specific rules we're gonna break.
Whatever we want, man. We can dip some cha, make some prank calls, light off some fireworks, sneak out, make out. Is your sister home?
Chad's now wondering if part of a sleepover is making your host feel uncomfortable.
Nothing could prepare me for what my friends had in store. Dave Kim brought his great-grandfather's pipe. Sirota topped that with his brother's throwing stars, but both paled in comparison to what Gary Ball offered up. A real, grown-up, ice-cold beer served warm.
The beer smells kind of funky.
Yeah, that's the point, dude. This is craft brew. Fancy kind, trust me.
You shouldn't say like Schlitz or something?
Yeah, it's better than real beer. My dad brews it in the downstairs bathtub. Dave Kim, you're up.
This was it. Sure, we were nervous, but it was my birthday, and we would become men together. Well, everyone but me. Sirota immediately booted. Cool guy Gary Ball wasn't far behind. Chad was next. And finally, Dave Kim, who had no options left. That first sip came up as quickly as it went down.
Not the washing machine!
Stop judging me!
There was no way it could get worse.
Squishy!
Until it did.
Look who I found moseying around the balloon corral. It's Cowboy Josh, and today he's gonna, oh, sweet green corn!
It was either think fast or be grounded for the rest of my life.
I think it was the O-dip.
And grounded it was.
I'd like to thank you all for coming to this meeting on such short notice. Let me begin by saying I'm not here today as Principal Ball. I'm just Earl, concerned parent.
Understood, Earl. I know you all have some questions about the messy incident that took place in our basement this weekend, but let's agree to have an open dialogue, free of any finger-pointing, okay? That said, I blame you, and you, and you, and back up, you.
Okay, let's calm down. Our kids only got into one of my unfermented batches, so luckily they just drank pure mold.
Oh, no, you will not lump Adam in with your band of beer sippers. He didn't get sick, which means he never drank the mold.
Oh, please, I've seen Adam doing horseplay when I have specifically requested no horseplay. He's no angel.
Oh, he is an angel. He could literally sprout wings and take flight at any moment.
I know Dave Kim better than anyone, and there's no way he'd ever drink a beer unless he was peer pressured.
Don't you point at me. From what I heard, your little Smokey the Bear brought a pipe.
My son hurt no one and looked like an elegant ship captain.
And with that, the open dialogue, free of finger pointing, broke down into a profanity-laced free-for-all. This absurdity went on for another 25 minutes.
Indoor voices, everybody.
And absolutely nothing was accomplished.
Now that's enough!
Oh, man, you know, we come from it naturally, right? I mean, we grow up in this. We learn that when something happens, the natural thing to do is to, you know, blame, right? I mean, because there's no fault to be taken. And we carry this into our adult lives. And you know, we say, well, you know, it's not my fault. I mean, I didn't know that he had a love affair with the bottle. I mean, I didn't know that, you know, she had this habit. I didn't know the economy was going to tank the way it did. I mean, you know, we have this way of kind of working our way out of the situation. And the reason that we don't own our part in our past is because we believe there's a better story to tell. All right? We believe that there's a better story. And see, I don't want to tell this story of how I screwed up. Right? I'd rather talk about how dishonest they were or how, you know, much they caused this to happen for me or how they always keep me off balance. And if we ever want to successfully move on to a better future, we've got to deal with our own past. All right, now, I want to take a look at an illustration on this. One of the best illustrations that I can think of when it comes to this whole idea of owning it comes from the Bible. All right, and here's the thing. You come by this naturally. All right, as a citizen of humanity, which is all of us, we all just have this in us, this ability to blame other people and to not own our part in whatever it is that's going on. So the reason we're so good at this is because you and I are both related to two people by the name of Adam and Eve. All right, now before we get into Adam and Eve, before we kind of dive into their story, you know, just a couple things. If you grew up in church, when you hear Adam and Eve, you're kind of like, oh yeah, I know the story, I believe the story, you know, but if you didn't grow up in church, you're probably like, oh, okay, you know, or maybe you had, you know, the same literature teacher I had that said, you know, the book of Genesis is just fiction, it's like a mythical, a methodical, you know, myth of how creation may have taken place, and so, you know, you don't really buy it, it's just a good story, and, you know, it's your Sunday school teacher was wrong, and your parents were wrong, your small group leader's wrong, but your English teacher was right, right? And so, you know, if you buy into that, that's cool, I'll give you that. You know, even if you don't buy into this story, here's the amazing thing, and I know some of you are like, man, how can this cool church with cool lights and a cool band be talking about two naked people in a garden? Seriously, are we not past that? Well, here's the thing. This ancient story, all right, whether you believe it or not, think it's myth, or I actually think it happened as some of us do, this story gives us huge insight into human behavior, right? Huge, huge insight into human behavior. All right, so let's take a look at the book of Genesis and see what we can learn about ourselves. And I want to hit a couple of the kind of big parts in the story, and then I want to hone in on one main part. So Genesis 1, verse 27 says this. It says, so God created mankind in his own image. Now, there is a ton in that phrase right there for another day. All right, it says, in the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. And then he goes on in verse 28 and said, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. All right, so Adam's like, all right, so where are the Ten Commandments? And God's like, it's not time for the Ten Commandments yet. God's like, hey, just go into the garden, be naked and make babies and have fun. All right? That's not exactly the way he said it, but that's my version of what he said, all right? He's like, just go into the garden, have fun. You know, and the interesting thing is in the Garden of Eden, there was only one rule, all right? God was like, hey, see that tree right there? And they're like, yes. He's like, don't eat from that tree, all right? And he's like, you can eat from anything else in the garden. You can run around naked. You can have fun. You can do what it just, you know, reproduce and multiply. Just don't eat from that one tree. It's a simple rule, one rule. It's not even hard to follow. And so, of course, you know what they did? They did what you and I did when we were kids and still do today. Whenever you're told, like, don't do this one thing, you gravitate to the one thing, right? And so, you know, here's what's interesting about this whole deal. All right, the Garden of Eden is in the exact form that God created it to be. It's exactly the way he created it, and he only needed one rule. only needed one rule. There wasn't a need for anything else. He just needed one rule, because one rule established that he was God and Adam and Eve were not. All he needed was one, right? I mean, and Adam and Eve eventually, you know, they're like, well, we don't need any other rules. I mean, sure, God, you say that's what we're supposed to do. We'll do that, right? He's like, great, we only need one rule. And then Adam and Eve broke the one rule. And here's what the Bible says next. It says that when they broke that one rule, the whole world got screwed up, right? Including you and including me. Now, this is where sin comes into the world. Now, you may not believe in sin, all right? But there is sin, all right? You're a sinner. I'm a sinner, all right? That may be one of the most offensive things you ever hear me say, all right? It's mildly offensive. There's more offensive things you might hear me say, but that's offensive to some of us, all right? But here's the thing. Even if you don't believe there's sin, there is sin. And you don't need the Bible to tell you that there's sin in the world. Listen, you don't even follow your own rules, right? I mean, how many of us at the first of the year said, man, I'm going to exercise 3 times a month or 3 times a week? Try 3 times a month, right? How many of you did that? You've actually broke your own rule, right? And 3 times a month isn't even hard, right? Or you said, man, I'm going to eat healthy every single day, and you've already broke your own rule. Or you said, well, you know, I'm going to stop at 2, but you downed the 12-pack the other night. I mean, we break our own rules, right? And so we don't have to look to the Bible to help us understand that there's sin in the world. All right, we just have to look at ourselves, right? And you can call it whatever you want. The Bible refers to it as sin. So Christians think this is how it happened, right? And other people, you might have your own theory, but see, here's the cool thing about Christians, right? Christians, if you're a Christian, you actually have something else to blame it on, right? You're like, well, it was Adam's fault. It was Eve's fault. I mean, if you don't believe in that, then it's all you, right? And so, you know, sinners enters into the world, and Adam and Eve, according to, you know, theology, commit the first sin. And here's what we find out happens here. This is why we're so messed up. Right, it says, then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord God as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And here's what they did. It says they hid. They hid from the Lord God among the trees of the garden. So here's what this ancient story is telling us. When you and I do something wrong, what do? We hide. We hide from other people. We hide something in our life. I was a couple years ago when one of my kids, who will remain nameless, was younger. I went into his or her room and found, you know, like 8 cans of Diet Coke, drunk, you know, open behind their bookshelf. And I said, oh, interesting. Looks like we're having a party in here. And they're like, yeah, just having some Diet Coke. I'm like, well, why do you have to go behind your bookshelf to have Diet Coke? Oh, well, I mean, it's just, you know, I like Diet Coke behind the bookshelf. I'm like, no. It's because you know you're not supposed to have Diet Coke, right? I mean, there's something about us that when we do something we know we're not supposed to do, we go and hide. And then what's the first thing we say? We're like, I'm sorry. And nobody believes us, right? And they shouldn't believe us, because why do we say we're sorry? We say we're sorry because we got caught, right? So when we get caught, you know, we were in hiding ourselves or hiding something else, and that's what we do until we get caught. But see, here's what happens next in this story. It says, but the Lord God called to the man. Now, this next part is really big right here, all right? This next part might be the very reason you're here today, all right? You may have walked in here, you had no idea why you came to Cross Point today, and everything else may be irrelevant to you, but maybe you came for this right here. When Adam and Eve screwed up, God went looking for them. Think about that for a moment. When Adam and Eve screwed all humanity over, I mean, the worst sin ever, God went looking for them. God goes looking for you. Not to like put you over his knee and, you know, spank some badness out of you, you know, not to throw out moral commands and condemnation. No. God goes looking for you just like a loving parent looks for their child. Say, oh, what can I do? Not to take everything away and not help you learn, but how can I help you work through this? And I think we see this as the story goes on. It says, but the Lord God called to the man, where are you? He knew where he was, right? He answered, I heard you in the garden and I was afraid. He's like, why were you afraid? Because I was naked, which meant I knew I did something wrong. I felt shame, so I hid. And God said, who? See, God knew there was a who right here, right? He knew that Adam couldn't have come upon this himself. He says, who told you that you were naked? In other words, who told you about guilt? I didn't build that into you. Who told you about shame? I didn't create you to be made to know shame. God's like, have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from? And you know, of course, what Adam said. He's like, yes, I did. You know, I went to the tree, I took the apple or the watermelon, whatever it was, and you know, I ate it. And Eve, listen, Eve had nothing to do with this. Leave her out of it. She had nothing to do with this. She shouldn't even be brought into this conversation. It was all me. See, some of you are laughing because you went to Sunday school like when you were a kid, right? You know the story. You're like, that's not how it happened. No, that's how it should have happened, right? That's what Adam should have said. He didn't say that. And this is so interesting because you know what happens? Very first time the two people created human beings in the world, when they sin, you know what they do the very first time that they're found out? They blame. They point the finger at one another. They don't take ownership. It's what you and I do every single time. Something happens, some disaster takes place. They blame. Here's how it actually happened. It says, the man, Adam, said to God, by the way, the woman, God, you took and put here in this earth, she gave me the fruit. In other words, hey, this is your fault, God, and this is her fault. So why don't you two go away, and why don't you, like, figure out who's more responsible for this, and you figure out who needs to own this thing, and when you come back to apologize to me, then maybe I'll have cooled down enough that I might just forgive you. I mean, isn't it interesting? The very first thing Adam does is point the finger at not only the woman, but at God. And he's partly right, but he's not 100% right. Right? See, this is so interesting. This is what happens when things fall apart. We tell a story about how things fell apart, but we don't tell the whole truth, right? We tell a story, and we might tell 90% of the story is truthful, and we just leave out 10%, but we tell the story over and over, and we begin to believe that 90% of the story is the whole story. It's like, as long as I can just put my part in my pocket and kind of store it away, man, I don't really need to share that. And so, you know, this is so important right here, because here's why we're dealing with this, all right? I want you to think about this phrase. If you don't own your part in your own history, you will drag it with you, and it will begin to undermine your future, right? It will determine your future. It will undermine your future. If you don't own your part in your own history, you will lay the groundwork for undermining your future. That's why you get to the next time, you're like, wow, this smells and feels and looks just like the last time. Here's how the story goes. It continues. It says, then the Lord God said to the woman, what is this you've done? And the woman said, the serpent. It was the serpent. He deceived me. And I ate. She's like, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. Which is true. It's just not the whole truth, right? See, if we don't pause long enough to own our part in our own history, our part in the disaster, regardless of how small it is, regardless of how seemingly insignificant it seems, you will undermine your entire future. And here's the thing. You can't blame your way into a better future. Right? You can blame your way into the future. People do that all the time. But you can't blame your way into a better future. It just doesn't work that way. This is why. Before you start over, we've got to hit the pause button. And we've got to ask some really, really important questions. And one of those questions is, what is my part? All right? I've got to own it. Now, here's the last thought before we do a little exercise here this morning. Last thing I want to share with you is this. Blame sets you up for a repeat experience. All right? Blame sets you up for a repeat experience so that next time's just like the last time. All right? And you may think, man, what happened last time is so inconsequential to what I'm dealing with right here. No, if we don't own our part, you know, then blame, actually, if we blame others, it actually sets us up for a do-over. But see, here's what happens. If we actually own it, it drops the emotional temperature in the situation, all right? And what's fascinating about this is as you drop your emotional temperature, all right, as you drop your anger a bit, because you begin to own a bit of what's happened in that situation, you begin to get clarity, and you actually are more equipped to make better decisions because you can see more clearly into the future. Right? As long as we keep going without owning our part in our history, then we're cloudy, we're fuzzy, we can't really see well into the next time. Now, Jesus, he says something really profound on this. Right? And if you've ever read the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says something just phenomenal right here. And it's this one little line, and if you aren't paying attention, you'll miss it. And so if you have the Crosspoint app, you can open that up and you can hit the Bible button. It'll take you right to this verse today. In fact, this is one of our next steps on the back of our connection card. Every week on this card, we give you some next steps, just some things to walk out of here and say, hey, here's what I'm going to do this week as a result of what God's growing in me, or maybe prompting me in. And so one of the next steps is just meditating on this passage this week. All right, and here's what Jesus says. Here's what Jesus says. He says, blessed are the pure in heart. Forget this. They will see God. And so, in other words, he says there's a relationship between clarity and purity. He says there's a relationship between the amount of stuff that's hidden in your heart and your ability to see clearly. There's a relationship between all the stuff that we need to clean out in our life, all the cobwebs, all the junk, all the stuff we've hidden, and our ability to see clearly into the next time. Because if I admit it, see, here's what happens. And listen, I know way more on this than you think. Right? You think, oh, you don't know anything about this, Kurt. Listen, I've had way too many experiences on this. Right? Here's what I've learned. That when I admit it, it is much more difficult for me to stay angry and to enjoy being angry. All right? So when I begin to admit my part in the disaster, it's more difficult for me to have anger toward the other person because I begin to see that, man, I'm a part of it. And my emotional temperature begins to go down. And I can see more clearly because I'm not just pointing the finger, you. I'm beginning to own it. So he says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And as long as there's something we're hiding, as long as there's something we're not being transparent on, we're going to have a difficult time with the next time being any different than the last time. Now, here's what I want us to do today. All right, we're going to move into exercise mode here. All right, so here's what I want us to do. I want you to do this today, all right, because if you don't do this today, what's going to happen is you're going to get to tomorrow and you're going to be like, oh, whew, man, I got out of there. He almost got me. I mean, he almost made me deal with my stuff, but, you know, he got me out of there. You know, I resisted. I said I'd draw the circle tomorrow. I'm going to ask you to draw a circle later today, all right, and you're going to be like, man, I am never going back to that church. That is a dangerous church. They may actually make me deal with my crap in my life. You know, we actually have a phrase in our staff that we deal in people's crap, all right? You may not like it, but that's what we do, all right? And so, you know, you're like, man, I almost had to dive in. It's messy. Sometimes it's hard, all right? But we want to help you grow so that the next time is different than the last time, all right? So here's what I want to ask you to do. All right, I want you to go home today, and this is one of the next steps on here today, so you can mark this if you're going to declare, hey, I want to do this, all right? I want you to go home today, and I want you to draw a circle. All right, I want you to draw a circle just like this on a piece of paper, all right? And then this circle is what's known as the circle of blame, all right? The circle of blame. And so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. All right, I want you to draw a circle, and this circle represents everything that contributed to the last time, everything that contributed to the disaster, everything that caused you to need a do-over in some sector of your life. And I want you to draw that circle, and as you're drawing it, I want you to draw the part of that situation that is your part, all right? So many of us, we're going to go just like this. Man, that is so cool when that happens. And so you're going to draw a line right there, and you'll be like, well, it was 50% her, and man, I can own 50% of it. And listen, nobody ever does this, all right? I never had anybody come in and say, man, it was 50% my part. You know, there's no story there, right? There's no story. You're like, oh, it was half me, it was half her. Okay, we're done. All right, you both owned it. We never do that, right? So maybe we do more like this. You're going to go home, and you're going to be like, well, you know, maybe it was like, let's say 30%, 70%. I contributed 30% to the problem, and you know my boss. I mean, you know, he's hard to get along with, or you know, it was her mother-in-law. That's what created the disaster. You know, it was 30 me, it was 70 her. No, I never hear this either. Nobody ever comes and says, man, I 30% was me. All right. Here's usually what it's like. She is an idiot. I mean, listen, now I may have had, you know, a small 5% was me. All right, but 95% was her, right? Or somebody will say, well, you know, yeah, the office is so screwed up. I mean, yes, I didn't follow all of the procedures I was supposed to follow, but man, I only contributed like 5% to the deal, right? See, here's the thing. You make peace with your past by owning a piece of your past. So I want you to go home and own what part of my past, what piece of my past is me, All right, now that's a cutesy little statement, but it's so big. This is a life-changing thing. If you draw this circle and you actually put this, you know, identify your part, all right? Recognizing, owning the part that I've been hiding, whatever it is, all right? Your piece of the equation, say, okay, I'm gonna draw that out. All right, now listen, I've heard every story, all right? I've met with people for 20 years. All right, I've been hearing stories, people come in, I've cried my eyes out with people. All right, I've gotten home to Julie and I've been like, Julie, I just can't understand this. I mean, you know, couples we love, and it's like she says it's his fault and he says it's her fault, and we just throw our arms up, we're like, we don't know. I mean, you know, sometimes it just sucks. I'm gonna be honest with you, and it's heartbreaking to watch people do the same thing in their lives over and over. All right, but here's the thing that's so important, all right? This is so big. This is your part, whatever your part is, however big it is. The more painful this part is, their part of the story is, in your story of what happened, the less likely you will ever recognize your part. All right? Let me say it a different way. The more extreme their part of the story is in your life, the less likely you'll ever come to grips with your part of the equation. Right, the bigger, the more emotional the story is of how they just created all this pain in your life, the bigger that is right here, the less likely you'll ever pause long enough to own your part of your story. Regardless of how small it is, regardless of how inconsequential you seem to think it might be, we've got to own it. So let me give you a couple examples of what it means to own my part, whether it's that part or it's this part or it's, you know, however big it might be. All right, let me give you some examples because these are subtle. I mean, a lot of times these are subtle and yet they're emotional. Honestly, sometimes they're embarrassing. You know, owning our part is embarrassing. And I think the embarrassment factor, I've seen it, you know, hundreds of times. People are just like, oh, yeah, yes, I did. That was my part. And it's embarrassing. So let me just give you a few of these to think through. Here's one. I should have confronted her. And I should have confronted her, but I was afraid. I mean, I had this thing in the back of my mind. I just felt like something wasn't right. There was something that was my best friend, and he said, man, you need to ask the question. You need to ask her. There's a question that needs to be asked, but I didn't want to know the answer. I was afraid of what the answer might be, so I never asked the question. I was afraid, and I let fear get the best in me. I played a role. I mean, yeah, maybe it was more her than me or more him than her, but I played a role. And I've got to own that part in my history. You know, I saw my brother, I saw my sister's husband, you know, my brother-in-law. I mean, they had it going on. I saw everybody had it going on. I mean, that's why I took on all this debt. I mean, that's why I leased this and I bought that. And I never knew the economy was going to tank the way that it did. And I mean, yes, I could easily point the finger and say, well, you know, because they bought this, it just made me feel like I needed more. You know, I lost my job in the middle. I could blame my boss. But the real problem, I mean, the real reason I'm carrying this debt, if I'm really honest, is it just looked like everybody else had it going on and I was jealous. I need to own my part. That's my part. I need to own it. I need to take responsibility for it. I stayed too long, and I enabled. I stayed in that relationship too long, and I enabled because I was afraid to be alone. And yeah, you know, it turns out that he had real issues or she had real issues. Yeah, you know, she had mommy issues, he had daddy issues. I mean, but the bottom line is I stayed way too long. I enabled the dysfunction to continue. And now I'm messed up. And my life's screwed up. I'm in a place of unhealth because I stayed too long. I've got to own my part. I was greedy. I just decided I had to have it. Period. I was greedy. It was just lust, pure and simple lust. And it's embarrassing to admit this. I mean, you know, I should know better. I'm grown up. I should know better. It's not like I'm going through puberty right now or anything. I mean, my parents told me and my church told me when I was a kid. And, you know, I told everybody, oh, it'll work out. It'll be fine. I mean, we'll get married. It'll be fine. You know, if I'm honest, it was just pure and simple lust. I mean, I told my parents it was for my financial reasons, but you know, yes, I could say she has daddy issues and she sucked me in or he sucked me in, but if I'm honest, it was just pure and simple lust. I've got to own that. I didn't do my best. I didn't do my best. Yeah, I mean, I think the teacher had it in for me. Yeah, I mean, I know she doesn't like me, but if I'm really honest, I goofed off. I didn't follow through. I didn't follow up. I didn't study. I was always late. I mean, if I'm really, yes, I could say, well, even though everybody else passed, you know, she had it out for me, but if I'm honest, if I'm really honest, it's on me. I've got to own it. I messed up. I should have called a cab. I mean, it's true. I can make all the excuses in the world, but I should have called a cab. I mean, I can tell you all the reasons I was where I was at that time of the night and why I shouldn't have been there, but if I'm honest, I chose to stay, all right? I could have left. It's my fault. I've got to own it. I mean, I could have said, nah, honey, I'm good. I could have another, but I probably should not. That would make a good song, by the way. Somebody ought to write something about that. But I didn't. See, if we want the next time to be better than the last time, we've got to own our piece of our past. And it's emotional, and it's embarrassing, and it's difficult. And I'm going to warn you, it's going to take the energy out of your story. I mean, there's going to be no more of this, well, he created or she. It's going to take the energy right out when you start to own it. But I'm telling you, it's the only way to create a better future. So I want you to go home today, and I want you to draw a circle. All right, maybe you're in your second marriage and you're like, man, my second marriage is already starting to feel like my first marriage. You need to draw the circle. All right, maybe you're in a relationship and you're dating and you've lost count of how many this has been in a row, how many relationships you've bounced from. You don't even know how many there were. You need to draw the circle because it just smells an awful lot like the past. You know, maybe you're in your dream job. You had this great opportunity come to you a year ago and you're like, man, it's just starting to feel though like the time I got let go the last time. You need to draw the circle, all right? Draw the circle and mark it on your card. Declare it in some way. In fact, if you're afraid you're not going to do this when you get out of here today, here's what I'm going to give you the opportunity to do. I'm going to give you the chance to text in. You can take out your phones and text in to the number 25827. That's our cross point kind of number here. Text in the keyword circle. And here's what we'll do for you. I will text you sometime in the next 24 hours and remind you to draw the circle. All right, if you're like, yes, I need to do this, you can mark it on the back of your card, which I encourage you to do. This isn't for us, this is for you. But you can also text in the keyword circle to 25827, just put circle in the text line, and then we will just send you something to remind you to draw the circle. All right, and when you draw the circle, I promise you, here's what's going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. As you draw that circle and you say, hey, this was my part, this was my piece in the pie, and then you write out to the side, here's what I need to own in this. You know what's going to happen next? Something else is going to come to mind. You're going to be like, oh, wow, I need to own that too. And then something else is going to come to mind. And as you begin to do this, you know what happens? Your emotional temperature goes down. And you begin to address the pieces in your life that you've just kept carrying into the next time. And you're able to see the future more clearly. You're able to see God more clearly. And so this is the next step in making sure the next time isn't like the last time. And I'm telling you, it's not going to happen because you want it to happen. All right? It's going to happen because you plan on it, because you say, okay, today I'm going to draw a circle. I'm going to put my part down. I'm going to write it out. All right, so make sure today, if that's where you are and you need to do this, just decide right now. Mark it, text it. You know, we'll put this up, Damon, at the end of the service. So if you get to the end, you're like, I need to do it again, or I just need to make sure I get this in, just text it in. We'll remind you. All right, let me pray for us. God, first of all, I want to thank you that we have the opportunity to gather here in this place and deal with things that are real, the things that actually matter in our lives. And God, for a lot of us today, man, there has been a bitter pill that we've just swallowed. You know, this idea of our past and owning pieces of our past, you know, that's not something that we do well. Maybe we're even starting it for the first time. And God, I just want to pray that you give us the courage to draw that circle today. Give us the courage to write some stuff down. Help us to break the cycle of dragging our past into the next experience. And God, to do this, we're going to need just a spirit of grace. So I pray for that right now, that there would be a spirit of grace that would just hang heavy over this place right now. And God, we know that as we do this, we know your hands of love, you just surround us. Your hands of love just begin to do in our lives what only they can do. and they begin to create a better future.